This is Women's Rights, a podcast about women's ordination, written and produced by students at Smith College.
Hi, I'm Audrey Greaves.
And I'm Vivian Jacobs.
We're your hosts for this episode of Women's Rights. This season, we are exploring the story of women's ordination in American Zen Buddhism, Reformed Judaism, and the Episcopal Church. To do so, we've interviewed women in each of these traditions, some of whom were in the first generation of ordained women within their religious communities.
In this episode, we're going to look at the Episcopal Church, and we're going to ask Reverend Molly Sherm, Reverend Julianne Bunting, and Bishop Jennifer Baskerville Burroughs about their experiences of ordination, womanhood, and the future of equality in their tradition.
The Episcopal Church started to officially ordain women in 1976. Today, nearly 50 years later, every single diocese, which means a district with a presiding bishop, in the church ordains women. However, the path between these two benchmarks isn't linear, and the statistics don't tell the whole story.
Because the history of women's ordination is recent, many of the churches the reverends grew up in did not have ordained women clergy. Nevertheless, in seminary and in their congregations, they each found inspiration and encouragement from the women around them. Here, Reverend Molly Sherm, now the associate rector of Saints James and Andrew Church in Greenfield, Massachusetts, describes some early memories of the church.
My first year in seminary, there was a woman deacon who was the supervisor of a hospital chaplaincy, and I literally chose that field placement in order to work with her and just experience her and have her as a supervisor. And there was one woman on the seminary faculty when I started, and she was a Roman Catholic nun.
Inspirational women come from multiple faiths, including Roman Catholicism, a faith that still does not ordain women to the priesthood.
Reverend Julianne Bunting, a full-time traveling priest who currently serves as the interim priest at St. John's Episcopal Church in Northampton, felt that support directly before leaving her Catholic faith to become an Episcopalian. She became a Catholic in her adolescence and joined the Society of the Sacred Heart, an order of nuns.
The religious of the Sacred Heart are like amazing, brilliant, hyper-educated, thoughtful, spiritual women who, two-thirds of them, more than exceed the requirements for ordination in the Roman Catholic Church, except for the biological bits and pieces.
Even when Reverend Bunting discerned her calling and decided to leave the Catholic Church, the nuns supported her decision.
In fact, when I told the provincial, the United States leader, that I was leaving because I needed to discern about ordination, she just looked at me and she said, "Julie, I can't tell you how many times I've had this conversation with your sisters." I mean, yeah, it was not about trying to talk me out of it. It was about recognizing the systematic and theologically questionable exclusion of women from ordained ministry in that tradition.
Reverend Bunting highly values her years with the nuns and the women she met who encouraged her despite the limits within their own tradition. Another one of our interviewees, Bishop Jennifer Baskerville Burroughs, found women religious leaders inspired her too.
It was as I was preparing for seminary that I realized that women had not always been ordained in the Episcopal Church, and there was quite a struggle in order for women to be ordained. But I'm thankful for having those both visual and personal role models who were really present to me, and many of whom continue to be mentors to me to this day.
The pioneering women priests and leaders within the faith also stood as inspirations for women looking to pursue ordination. In 1974, 11 women held an irregular ordination ceremony in Philadelphia. The women, known as the Philadelphia 11, were going directly against the will of the General Convention, the governing body of the Episcopal Church, to do so. They became symbols of the momentum behind women's ordination, and their bold step led to the passage of the ordination of women at the following General Convention in 1976.
Among those inspired to their ordination by these women was Reverend Molly Sherm, who was among the first women to be ordained after the resolution was passed. Among the women who inspired her were Carter Hayward and Sue Hyatt, two of the original Philadelphia 11.
So it was a huge privilege for me to work directly with them and be mentored by two of the first 11 women ordained in the United States Episcopal Church.
Despite these mentors and the influential faith communities that supported women's ordination in the Episcopal Church, there were still many challenges to their paths. The St. James and Andrew Church, where Reverend Molly Sherm now serves as associate rector, was not always as welcoming as it is today under her leadership. After her seminary, she was ordained a deacon and got a job serving the congregation in that role. However, once Reverend Sherm became a fully ordained priest, the rector completely shut her out of any leadership role.
And when I got back from New York from the ordination, there was a letter from him waiting for me that said, "We do not believe in women priests here at St. James Greenfield. You are no longer welcome in the ministry here. We would be happy to have you come and sit in the pew."
In an ironic twist, the St. James and Andrew Church now have a team of rectors completely made up of women.
In 2016, Bishop Baskerville Burroughs became the first Black woman to be ordained a bishop in the Episcopal Church ever. As a Black woman, her experiences of gender discrimination are often more layered than someone who is not a person of color. She describes the experiences here, saying,
"Sure. This is, again, with the intersectionality thing. Here's what goes through my mind. When I have a challenge, I'm like, is it because I'm Black? Is it because I'm a woman? Is it because people think I'm younger than I am? Like, it's a calculus that I feel like I just run all the time. I don't even think about it half the time as people are experiencing me. And I do know that there's an extra burden of trying to figure out how to maneuver through the church space when there are just so many assumptions that are tied up to gender and race to some degree.
While one's gender is often a facet of one's life that carries discrimination with it, womanhood can also be a source of strength, inclusivity, and community. Each woman we talked to had experiences of this sort.
You know, men have been clergy for eons, right? And yet I think there's something different about when women are put in positions of leadership and the way we listen and invite others. I always think it's interesting that it was not a man who invited me to this certain ordination. It was another woman. Like, what is, you know? And any one of the men serving at the church I was at could have done that. But I think there perhaps is a reliance on sort of the intuition a little bit more sometimes than men do, and the ability to want to make the tent a little bit bigger that's inherently a part of how women form community.
This is inclusivity, not just for other women, but for everyone. So often, pregnancy is seen as a vulnerability, but in truth, it is a great strength in more ways than one. When Reverend Sherm was 9 months pregnant in the early 1980s, only a few years after the acceptance of women's ordination in the Episcopal Church in general, she was preaching the sermon in a place of the regular director for an Easter service when something only made possible by her gender made a profound impact.
This man, who was, you know, a guy like probably in his 40s, said to me after the service, he said, "I felt like my mother was feeding me," after he had received communion from me, which is very powerful. It's very powerful. I mean, it's certainly also the case that in terms of pastoral counseling, and women being able to talk about some of the difficult experiences in their lives, having women representing the church and being the church for them is certainly different from you know, having men.
However, women's leadership and the strength they've drawn from womanhood will not always look the same. It's a trap to think that all women lead in the same ways. In particular, women will often face harsher criticism for their leadership styles, especially when they differ from pre-existing gender norms. As Bishop Baskerville Burroughs explains.
I remember when I was serving as rector for the first time, meeting the head pastor, there was a lot of criticism given to me because I was not a bear-hugging, warm and fuzzy priest for the congregation. And I kept going, why would I'm not supposed to do that, right? But the previous priest, who was a very large man, very teddy bear type of a guy, was one where, you know, that worked for him. And so people were surprised that because I was a woman, of course, I would be like that. And I'm like, well, but that's not who Jennifer is, right? I lead differently. So trying to figure out, like, what is my space of being authentic, being warm, being pastoral, and doing it my way, which is influenced by all kinds of things.
Bishop Baskerville Burroughs doesn't need to be any one type of priest or bishop to be successful. But the pressure she was under to lead in a particular way is representative of the gendered criticisms many ordained women face because of their leadership role.
Within the church, there is a long history of primarily male leadership. As women, how leadership roles are embodied is often different from how men would embody them, although, as we've established, this difference can be very complex. Further, having only male leaders can have an implicit impact on how women view themselves and their role within their faith. For example,
I mean, I think at some level, I was confused between God and the minister in my parish because he was so much deferred to. And I mean, he was like the most important person.
The relationship between God and the priest has a lot to do with their perceived shared gender. Because God is the Father, it is less likely for women priests to have the same kind of conflation between themselves and the divine. To be more self-critical and to recognize this difference can be one way to circumvent this power dynamic. And, as Reverend Bunting describes, seeing other fellow women embody these roles has a huge impact.
There were just wonderful women when I became Episcopalian. There were so many, relatively speaking, so many women priests that it was like, after a little while, you just didn't even think about it. And it was, I mean, the first couple of times I remember crying, because just being over, you know, not boohooing, but like my eyes watering because it was so profoundly different and so moving to see women leading worship and preaching and leading the Holy Communion prayers.
And this is just the start. What would it be like if there was an abundance of women? Bishop Baskerville Burroughs is already beginning to envision this future. Speaking about her own status as bishop.
There'll be a generation of people who are like, they've never had a male bishop. Wait, can you imagine? Like right now, there are folks who have come to the church since 1997 will not have experienced a male bishop. So what does that do to help shift the expectations of who is leading and what that looks like? I think those are the pieces of work that are necessary. And then, you know, the rules have been set for a long time, but it's all of the stuff that's in our hearts and, you know, in our minds as we go and make the calls to call new leaders into positions of leadership that makes the difference. And that's a slow work.
But what actually occurs as this work is happening? And what needs to happen for the church to move forward and into a more inclusive future?
Some leaders see a natural progression as to how the Episcopal Church can become more egalitarian, like Reverend Sherm.
I don't think there's anything sort of structural that needs to happen that's not happening. It's just changing centuries of sort of assumption and comfort with a particular way of the church looking.
However, others see much more systemic changes as necessary. While ordained women can serve in every Episcopal church, that doesn't mean that they are the people that communities look to hire as their rectors. As Reverend Bunting explains,
there's been definite progress, but there are still things like, you know, if you are looking for your next call, your next parish to serve, that they're the straight white younger men with wives and children will almost always get called for jobs, for parish ministry jobs, over any woman, and definitely those of us who are in the LGBTQ community.
So what does a changing tradition for a changing world look like? Diversity, inclusion, and calling in all must be a part of that, especially as communities move through a world filled with polarization and now a pandemic. How do leaders create a progressive faith community? Bishop Baskerville Burroughs speaks of how her faith has led her through this year and how it can help move her community forward.
And I'm just telling you, in this last year, I've been tested. Like, we've all been tested. Like, how do I say at the end of the day that the insurrectionists on at the Capitol earlier this year are folks who I might just be looking at some point in my, on the other side of glory here? Like, God loves them too? Really? Really? God does. And I have to believe that, even if I hate them personally for doing what they did, right? So you can leave this in the podcast. Like, this is the thing that I think is what mature faith is about. Like, we have to be able to continually work on those things, talk about them, know that it may not ever be reconciled and it may not always please me. But you know what? God's going to do a lot of things in this world that are not going to be pleasing to me, because it's not all about me.
As we mentioned at the beginning of this episode, all of the dioceses of the Episcopal Church now allow the ordination of women. However, as we heard today, the winding history of women's ordination isn't stagnant. Women still only make up 36.9% of priests in the church. And while that number steadily rises every year, the story doesn't end in numbers.
While the church is still marked by gender discrepancies in the makeup of their ordained, the stories we heard today all were colored by hope. All three priests we talked to focused on the energy that they felt carried their groups forward, the energy that stems from their devotion to their communities and their faith, and most importantly, their hope in the members of the Episcopal Church of the future.
That concludes our podcast for today. Special thanks to Reverend Molly Sherm, Reverend Julianne Bunting, and Right Reverend Baskerville Burroughs.
Also thanks to Dan Bennett and Travis Grandy of the Smith Learning, Research, and Technology team. And thanks to the Andrew Mellon Foundation that supports public-facing student writing at Smith College. Tune in next time on Women's Rights for a look at women serving as Soto Zen priests.